When's the last time you were home, just by the way?
4.5 years ago.
Oh my God.
Literally.
Wow.
And the place looks amazing today, like, because it's sunny. Yeah. I'm like, oh, I can nearly live here again.
Yeah, you weren't here last week.
Yeah, exactly.
When's the last time you were home, just by the way?
4.5 years ago.
Oh my God.
Literally.
Wow.
And the place looks amazing today, like, because it's sunny. Yeah. I'm like, oh, I could nearly live here again.
Yeah, you weren't here last week.
Yeah, exactly.
Welcome to the Go Glow podcast with Niall Harbison. This season, I've teamed up with ReproMed, Ireland's leading fertility clinics. Having been through the process of IVF myself, I understand how daunting and difficult a fertility journey can be. With clinics in Dundrum, Dublin and Mahoon in Galway, their world-class team offer the expertise, empathy and compassionate care needed to help and support you. Dr. Hans and his team have high levels of success due to their experience with 120 years combined fertility experience and passion to help their patients grow their family. You can visit ReproMed.ie, which is packed full of information on IVF, egg donation, fertility preservation, and so much more. Welcome to the Good Glow podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in today. Niall Harbison is my guest. I'm sure lots of you know who Niall is. A very successful entrepreneur in Ireland. He created Love in Dublin. And from the outside in, I suppose back in the day, it looked like Niall had it all. He was innovative. He was creative. He was starting these really successful businesses. And he looked like he had it all. He went to Thailand. He sold his business for a fresh start and had a very public breakdown. He hit his rock bottom. Niall tells us today that he is an alcoholic. He speaks so openly and vulnerably about that. And thank you so much to him. He is saving lives in the process. So after his rock bottom moment, he woke up in a Thai hospital. It took him about a year to put his life back together. But when he put his life back together, wait until you hear what he did. He started feeding street dogs. He now feeds 800 street dogs a day, and he is taking this charity global. His new book is out now. It's called Hope. It is beautiful. I read every single page and I loved it. Today, Niall is going to tell us how kindness saved him. Giving out kindness saved him, and in turn, he got it back. He's put his life back together. He's on an incredible journey, and this is a gorgeous podcast. Now, during the podcast, I do say this is the last episode. That is not true. We do have a special episode planned over the next few weeks. Something is cooking, as many of you know, so bear with us. I think that episode will be worth the wait. So before I get into it, the September reset is still available. Your day one can be tomorrow or today, a chance to reset, rebalance, refocus with 14 days of coaching, meditations, visualizations, and all it takes is 10 minutes a day for a brand new you in September. You can join over on thegoodglow.ie or hit the link in the show notes.
Niall Harbison, welcome to the Good Glow.
Thanks for having me.
Do you know what? I never knew if I'd say those words.
Oh, I didn't think I'd be sitting in Dublin talking to you. It's been a whirlwind.
Yeah, because we both had our lives in media, I suppose, in traditional media in Ireland. I worked in Spin, so I suppose Love in Dublin was a website that we always kept our eye on, and everything you were doing, and you were so innovative and so forward. I think you pissed a few people off along the way, but you were incredible at what you did. And I followed you on Twitter, and then all of a sudden it just seemed like you just disappeared.
I did. I literally did. I used to work in media, yeah, like corporate worlds, and I think I loved it. You know, at the time you're in the world, I enjoy it. Now I look back at it and I'm like, Jesus, I never would want to do that again, but because of what I do now. But I just was looking for, I think I was always looking for a bit of meaning in life, for a bit of a change. And it's been a bit of a mad journey since then.
So 4.5 years since you've been home. And thank you, first of all, so much for making time for me today, because I was seriously trying to hunt you down last week. I was sending you so many messages, contacting your publishers, and you didn't need to be here today, but you are. So thank you so much.
No, well, I tell you, I swear to God, I'm must get 1,000 messages a day now, because, and they're all about dogs, like, you know, checking in on this dog or that dog. And then I was somewhere and I saw one from Jamie, your partner, and I was like, geez, I must answer that tonight. And then I forgot. And then I saw one from the publisher, and then I saw one from you. And I was like, you got me the third time, not because I was ignoring it, just because I'm so overloaded at the moment. But I was like, I've heard so much about your podcast and the effect it's had on people. Like, genuinely, I see people talking about that all the time. So felt like the right place to be talking to.
Yeah. And there's a lesson in that, isn't it? Like, persistence pays off. But tell me how you felt then, 4.5 years since you've been home, arriving into Dublin on such a beautiful day today. How did you get to kind of look out the window, have a minute as you were coming down?
I did. I looked out to the right. I thought I was on the wrong side of the plane. You know, the way you come in over Howth and yeah. all that. And I was like, oh, and then I was like, oh, I'm on the right. I'm on the correct side of the plane. And I looked down and I could see Donabate Beach, where I used to walk Snoop, my dog. And it's very, just something very romantic, I think, coming back to Ireland after being away. Even I used to, when I was away for 2 weeks, I'd like it. But yes, coming in over Howth Head and all that, it's kind of surreal being back in Dublin, yeah.
You're coming home, I suppose, to open arms. It's like you're almost like the Pied Piper. Everywhere you go, you just have hundreds of people walking behind you because of the incredible things you've done and the energy you're putting out and into the world. I was listening to your book over the last 2 days. It's absolutely incredible. Tell me about New Year's Eve 2020.
Yeah, that was grim. So I left. I've been an alcoholic my whole life, or I was. That's probably the better term. And suffered from depression and anxiety. And I kind of fudged through my life and business and everything. I was a functioning alcoholic. And then I went to Thailand for the good life, in terms of, like, I thought it would be healthier there because it's sunny and there's healthy food and I could get away from the Dublin media drinking scene and, you know, pubs and all that. And then I kind of did for 6 months or a few spells, but then I hit, like, COVID hit, broke up with my girlfriend Sarah, and then I had, like, no checks and balances. There was nobody to look after me. So I went on a mad bender. Like, and I mean mad. I was drinking like 4 bottles of wine a day, like 40 cigarettes, and then 5 Valiums, and then whiskey. And then it was just like a huge downward spiral. But I think it was I didn't get this properly diagnosed, but I think it was like a mental breakdown, like genuinely, because I was, in the weeks leading up to being in hospital, I was drinking. And then I just would be in restaurants and stuff on my own, and I'd have, the tears would start coming down my face, and not like, just out of nowhere, like nothing sad was happening, nothing, you know, on TV, nothing, just the tears. I'd sort of touch my face and there was like tears coming down my face. And I thought, I was like, geez, that's a bit odd, isn't it? But like, I was so drunk at the time, I didn't really. So yeah, ended up in hospital then, nearly died. I was in ICU for 3 days, like rigged up to everything, like whatever, heart machines and all that. And yeah, it's pretty horrific. And I think I was trying to drink myself to death, if I'm being honest.
And this was in the middle of COVID. So when your girlfriend left, you were by yourself, were you?
Yeah, well, I had friends and stuff there, but there was nobody to check, so I could start drinking it. You know, even if you're an alcoholic, if you've got a girlfriend around, you kind of have to sort of, you can start drinking maybe at midday, or, you know, you could make excuses. Whereas now I could just be like, it's 8 o'clock in the morning, let's go. So.
And did you ever, on reflection over the last few years, figure out what those tears were for?
I think, that's a good question. This is like a therapy session. It's good. I would say just for the sad state of my life. I was just like, had never addressed stuff that from my childhood. I'd never found anything I liked doing. Just general, I just felt worthless, I guess. Just like, it was muddling my way through life and just, you know, it was really tough. It's like when you do everything right, I'd have little spells where I'd run, I'd do exercise, I'd eat well, everything like to the extreme. And then I'd still get depression and I'd be like, for fuck's sake, sorry, I don't know if I can swear on this. I'd be like, Jesus, what more can I do to beat this? And it's still hanging over me. So it's just fed up.
And why Thailand? Like, what was it about it?
It is like, now I love it because it's the healthy, like I used to just struggle here in November, December, when you know, when it's dark, you leave work at 4 o'clock and it's dark and the only thing to do was go for pints. And, you know, I was always up for that. So I just said, Thailand, there's real healthy living culture out there, you know, fitness camps, all that. So I live in an area that's really good for fitness and stuff like that. But there's also the party scene as well. Mm-hmm. So I slipped into the wrong side of things.
So you had this rock bottom moment and you speak about it so beautifully, well, so honestly in your book. I was hanging on your every word. But you woke up in this hospital on New Year's Day, I presume, was it?
Yeah, I think I went in New Year's Eve morning or something like that. Yeah, yeah.
So you spent then a couple of days in there, and that's when you realized that you actually wanted to live.
Yeah, and it wasn't the sort of the start of it, because I was still obviously on everything like Valium. It was still, it's very dangerous when you stop that amount of booze cold, you know. So I was, like, my body was just going through, I wouldn't wish it on anybody. Like, my hands were like claws because I was just so anxious. I was like, there's a clock on the wall, like I was just watching the seconds go. I was like, if I can just live to the, you know, one more minute, I'll figure out what to do then. And then I was like, I'd be like, shit, I'd hear the heart monitor. I was obviously anxious. I was like looking at the heart monitor and I was like, that's clearly going up. It's going to stop. I'm going to die. And then, so it was all sorts of just, I don't know if I'm sure many of the listeners have been in hospital, but if you go to hospital with anxiety and alcohol withdrawal and you're in Thailand, and, you know, it was just a horrible, horrible place to be.
Wow. And you got through that by yourself.
But the thought of Snoop, so Snoop was my dog who came from Ireland. I brought him with me to Thailand. And then I was so drunk when I got taken into hospital, like I was just at the end of the bender, that then I kind of 10 hours in, I was like, oh my God, Snoop. And obviously my friends had taken him and looked after him and everything. And I just kept thinking about that. I was like, my God, Snoop's going to be on his own and he's going to think I've left and I've let him down. And that's the thing that really got me. So I wasn't lying there and then I was like, right, I'm gonna go and save the world and help dogs. Yeah. And, you know, it didn't happen in a click of, I was still like highly anxious and depressed and stuff, so it was had to get out of hospital first.
Yeah. And then it's just literally, like you said, 1 second to the next, 1 minute, 1 hour, 1 day.
Yeah, but the hours didn't come fast. I was on minutes for quite a while, like literally like looking at the minutes. And then, like, it's a weird thing, like for anybody who has anxiety, just like little noises and stuff can set you off. And like, I was highly anxious. And I thought those machine guns. And I was like, what the hell is that? It was like the New Year's Eve fireworks. They started going off and that tripped my anxiety big time. Or then like, I was taking a lot of Valium, and you can actually get it in Thailand. It's not a big deal. But then I saw like a policeman come into the hospital. He was just in the hospital. He just happened to be there. And I was like, my God, the cops are here. They're taking me away for the Valium. I'm going to a Thai prison. Do you know what I mean? Like, you're just all these things going through your head that are just, yeah, it wasn't a nice place.
And like, because you were such a success in Ireland, do you think there was like a self-sabotage? Was it almost like everything you touched turned to gold in your before life?
But it was like, I know it looks, and I think it's true for a lot of people, from the outside it looked like a success, but like, I was drinking like mad, I was gambling, I was like, there's times I was completely broke, didn't even have like 10 euros to my name, and like everybody's like, oh, there's Niall Harbison, the businessman, he's brilliant, isn't he? And, you know, like, and I'm showing up to like a big fancy meeting in a hotel or something, and they're all like looking at me as if I'm brilliant at business, and I have literally 10 euros in my bank account, you know. And I'm like, how am I going to get the fucking, you know, will I get the bus home, or will I, you know? So there's a bit of, yeah, you're like, when you're that addicted to stuff, you're telling a lot of lies, you know. You're not just those sort of lies, but lies to like friends and family, and you're, how do I get the next? You're just trying to get to the next drink, basically.
Yeah, so stressful as well. Just keeping up that,
yeah, you know, facade.
It's really, I feel like every season I do, this kind of theme emerges. And I spoke to Millie McIntosh recently, and she's got an alcohol-free life. And I spoke to Richard O'Halloran. He is an Irish businessman who was held in China for 3 years. You might remember that story from a couple of years ago. And when he was held in China for 3 years, he was in a hotel room, he was by himself, and he became an alcoholic. And to think that you were both suffering so much in isolation in these different countries, away from your friends, your family, your support system. Did COVID get you there, or did COVID save you in the end?
No, I think it was like more a catalyst for me. Like, look, I've been an alcoholic in, I've been in early houses in Dublin. I've been doing pills in, like, you know, Dublin nightclubs. I've been in Melbourne at nightclubs at 4 a.m. I've been in a nice house that I had in Ranelagh in the afternoon drinking wine. I've been in, you know, cocktail bars. It doesn't matter where you're at or what, you know, what, like, an alcoholic is still, you find a way to get the booze. And so COVID, I think COVID, look, it had a huge impact on everybody. Even people who are not alcoholics or anything, I think became borderline, had issues, being locked up in a house and were drinking too much. So it was sort of an accelerant, if that's a word. It just sort of like made everything bigger and faster for me with the drink.
Yeah. So tell us then, you started then, the minutes eventually turned into getting to the hour to hour. When did the change start to happen?
Well, ridiculously, I got home from hospital, like ICU. And by this stage, I'd obviously, I was thinking positive. So I got a taxi home and I had Snoop and I was like, right. And I swear to God, I put my running shoes on and I went for a jog. And I didn't get more than 150 yards. I swear to God, I was like, I got down the street and I think I nearly had a heart attack. I was like, okay. And then I went back inside and had like a major panic attack. And like, I was like, okay, that wasn't too smart. But I had good intentions. I really like... And then I was like, I've just come out of ICU. That probably really wasn't very smart. But then, no, it was months, actually. Like, I had like brain fog. Like, I tried to just log into my, you know, the normal stuff. You'd go to your laptop and you'd log into your Apple account or your Gmail or check your bank balance. Couldn't remember like passwords that I've known for 10, 15 years. And I was looking at them. And then I was like, oh, I'll just like reset the pass. And then I'd be looking at it and I couldn't figure it out. Genuinely couldn't. And then I was like, right, I'll have to come back to that tomorrow. And like literally like the, you know, like your passcode on your phone, something that you just couldn't remember or you couldn't forget. So my brain was just mush. And then at this stage I was in the back at home in the apartment, but I was up to like, if I can just survive 4 hours, I'll be okay. Or if I can get 2 hours sleep or, you know, so I was like, it was still tough. It wasn't like you just come out and you're fixed. It was a lot of damage there that had been done.
Wow. So you started to connect with the dogs then?
It was actually a year. I did a lot of, I was lucky I had savings from when I was working. And so I always think I'm blessed in that sense, because other people, you know, if you had to go to work or something, Jesus, or tell your bosses all this sort of, like I didn't have a boss or I didn't have, and I had a little bit of savings. So I was like, I'll just take a year to myself and just try and fix my body. And it kind of took that long. So I wasn't doing much in that year. I was just like reading. I was trying to just get my shit together.
And now that you say that, actually, I remember that on Twitter. So you would put up, you started posting, well, you've always posted food photos, but you started to post food photos and like really nourish yourself. And I remember looking at your lunches being like, whoa, that's amazing. And you were just started to post more positive things.
Yeah. It's funny, like these things, you know, the way, like, I'm sure you're the same with the podcast. It's like, you know, you maybe had a bit of an idea that you wanted a podcast. Or sorry, I'm paraphrasing for you here, but you kind of know where you want to go in your life or a bit of a journey. But, and I like the dogs sort of happened naturally, but it's not like I sat down and I was like, right, I'm going to save dogs and I'm going to be feeding 800 on the moped and I'll have Instagram videos or a book or, you know, like just little bits sort of. And those food photos would probably have been the first bit. I was probably like, oh, this is nice. I was just in a more positive place, I think.
When you say that, that reminds me, because I was speaking to Oprah's life coach, Martha Beck, and a lot of my listeners of the Good Glow will be familiar with this story, but she lives life like connected to her true nature, like who she really is, like her true self. And I remember asking her, like, how do you do that? Because life is so hectic and busy. And she was like, well, I just do the things that make me feel warm. So just say, for example, she's tired in the middle of the day and technically, you know, you're not supposed to sleep during the day, but she's like, no, I'll have a nap because that's going to make me feel warm. And then when she goes to have the nap, she says, then she gets the next message of what to do. And then she leads from one thing to another. And then she said, after a while, her life just became really, really warm. So it's like in your recovery, it was just like one warm thing led to the next warm thing, to the next, to the next.
I think that's right. Yeah. And if I think the one thing that I just, and I think I might be addicted to this, is like just kindness. Like I'm now addicted to kindness because like I figured out with the dogs, like I was kind to them. And like they were 10 times kinder back. And then like people started being so kind to me and I wasn't doing anything. I was just being kind. I was just like, I wasn't asking anybody for anything. I wasn't, you know, like at all. I was just posting pictures of dogs or whatever. And just putting the kindness out there came back to me times 10. Like I can't even explain it. It's like some sort of life hack or something. I should.
Well, that can be your second book.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, it's just like two sentences long. Be kind to everybody and you'll get it back.
But that's the thing, because I felt recently in my life that I've been getting a lot of green lights. So things that I'm doing this season of the podcast has gone really well. And I was lying in bed on Saturday night, actually, and I was like, who am I going to get for my last guest? And I really want Niall. And you know, I'm going into a really stressful week now because I didn't get Niall. And then 2 minutes later, you wrote back and you were like, can you do Monday? And I was like, green light. And then I was coming down here today and I turned the corner and I went the long way because I said I might get a car space on the road. And I turned around, the nearest car space you can get to this studio. I was like, green lights. But I think the more that I say green lights out loud, the more green lights I'm getting. And it's like that with the kindness. The more you put out, the more you're getting. And that's why everywhere you go now, you turn around, there's 400 people standing behind you. Like,
it is that. But I think there's something in that it's coming from you yourself as well. I think it might not have been the car parking space, but you'd have seen, you're just in a good frame of mind. Like you might've bumped into another friend and you'd have been telling me that it was the friend you'd seen, or you know what I mean? It's not, you're just in a good place, I think and then things sort of snowball for you when you're in a good place and it carries on. But yeah, putting kindness out there is just unbelievable. I can't really wrap my head around what's happened.
Yeah. So tell us about, so just in the book, you say that you went and you'd buy these giant bags of food and then they're 15 euro. And then you realize if you went to the wholesalers, you get it cheaper. So then you get the cheaper food, but then you wanted to do more than just feed the dogs.
Yeah. So I feed 800 every day now and like give the food to different volunteers. I make it. It's kind of just using business background that I had to do those things, and then we like give medical treatment to dogs and sterilize dogs, and it's just growing into this big thing that's like, so my mission now is to save 250 million street dogs around the world, which is insane, but I'm just carried along by people's goodwill and I'm going to try and get it done.
How would you track that number? Like what would it be? How do you do that?
Well, it's like actually we're spreadsheets, graphs, maps, data. Like we're actually putting all the systems in place to like really actually get it done. And then boring stuff, like we're going to have to do legislation and education and stuff like that. So it's going to be a 20, 30 year project. But it's, people see the little dog stories and the, you know, the cute dogs and stuff like that. And that's brilliant, because it educates them that there's a problem there. But the big boring stuff, it's not boring, but it's more just logistics and stuff like that is the really important part.
Wow, that's just so inspiring and so incredible. Just a short break to thank ReproMed for supporting the Good Glow again this season. A fertility journey is so personal, and ReproMed pride themselves in taking compassionate interest in your care. Having spent time with the team, I've even recorded a podcast with Dr. Hans, which you can find on the Good Glow Health. I know they will provide you with everything you need to know about treatment options in a safe, supportive, and honest environment. ReproMed has invested significantly in the past 3 years.
years in their state-of-the-art laboratory to give their patients the best chance of success and are trusted and recommended by maternity hospitals and GPs throughout Ireland.
Has this, obviously then with 250 million dogs, it is going to go further than Thailand?
Yes. But Thailand on its own is like 8 million dogs. So that's, it's, I'm not just going to fix that in a couple of weeks. So it's, I think things, I've got a charity now in the UK, which I've set up, and there's one in America coming and there's one in Thailand. So it'll have to move very fast to get it done. But yeah, it will go beyond Thailand, definitely.
What's life like for you when you go home at night in your house in Thailand?
Oh, I sleep like a baby because for the first time in my life, I'm happy. And that comes from just doing something that, like, I don't want to like blow my own trumpet, but you literally save a dog's life. You know, an action that you can have saves a life, or maybe two or three lives in a day. Like, so you take a dog that's a broken leg or whatever, and you fix it. So you've saved three lives that day. Like, so when you go home and you lie down in bed, doesn't matter what's going on. Like, doesn't matter if it's rainy or, you know, your bike's broken or, you know, bad stuff. Like, you've saved three lives. So I go to bed and I'm like, I just feel like $1 million. I'm just like, well, I've done my best today.
You probably won't tell me, you know, without me asking, but you're saving dogs' lives, but you're saving human lives as well, right?
I really struggle with the sort of praise part of things, but I've met, like, I see the comments on Instagram, like, you know, what are messages people send and stuff, but from the last few days, I've met a lot of people with depression, alcoholism, stuff like that. So I think they find a joy in the dogs, and then maybe the fact that I was so down that maybe they see if somebody was in that bad a place, maybe there's a bit of hope for them as well. So, you know, I remember when I was at my worst. There's a boxer called Tyson Fury. It's a Netflix show as well.
Yeah, so no, I know.
I don't want to say you don't know the boxing side, but you might know the Netflix show. So he was the same. He was suicidal and really in a bad place. And I was like watching his videos, like, and I was trying to send him messages. He was a lot smaller at the time. I was like sending him messages like people send me now. So I just feel I have a bit of a duty to try and help people as well. So I can totally relate to anybody who's struggling, you know, like, it's not, life's not easy.
What was it like then going back to the UK and Ireland, like, over the last couple of days?
Surreal. It's not like I don't even know how to explain it, to be honest. It's like, it's not totally my comfort zone. I can do it because I used to work in media, so I can do media. Yeah. But I was coming out of interviews in the UK and like people had fucking watched the interview and they'd driven down there and they were outside waiting to take selfies. And I was like, this must be somebody else. Like, I'm watching it from
the outside.
Yeah. I'm like, this can't be real, you know?
And do you know why that's happened though? It's because that's not what you set out to achieve.
Yeah, yeah. And I think I'm just honest as well. I think do you know, like, everything feels very fake. I think it's probably why your podcast is so successful as well. It's like, just honesty. I think people are looking for a bit of like honesty and real life rather than everything's fake and people want reality. You know?
Yeah, people are looking for the
real life.
Real life.
Yeah.
So how different would you say the Niall coming in today on the flight was 4.5 years later?
Oh, totally different. Like a different person. Like the same person underneath it all, but I just didn't really know what I was at back then or like anything about life. I was miserable to the core on the inside. Light switches flicked in my head and I figured out life. And if I go back to like drinking again, I'll die next time because I'll push it so hard. Like so that's how high the stakes are.
The dogs keep you on the straight and narrow.
Dogs and now actually people. I can't believe the people. People are unbelievable. Like, and I didn't realize there was so much kindness in the world. Like, yeah. People are, my pockets.
Oh my God, I was the same in my recovery.
Yeah. It's unbelievable, isn't it? It's like you think the world's big and bad and angry and, you know, like you got to get ahead and everything. But then suddenly you realize that it's not. Like, everybody's really nice, you know?
Yeah, it's almost like you're kind of trained to look for the worst in people. And then when people start having your back and sending you love and telling you their stories of overcoming, you actually can see how much good in the world there is.
I think, I don't know if it's media or someone, but like you're just programmed into the worst. And yeah, maybe we're really bad at showing it to each other, or everybody's in their world. I saw it in London big time. I was like, Jesus, people are like zombies. Like they're on their phones. They're barreling past you on the tube or whatever. And I'm like, this is really not good.
I think as well, just to see them, just to be seen is enough sometimes, because there's so many people walking around that no one smiles at them in their day. From the minute they wake up to the, like you sitting in the restaurant with the tears rolling down your face, nobody could see you.
Yeah. I think, yeah, it's that human connection. And I think the phones are pretty bad for that, you know, like we're all glued to them. It's like I was in Liverpool yesterday or the day before, and there was a man, and I could see him. He was doing a book signing, and he was about five people back, and his girlfriend was holding his hand, and I could see her like squeezing the hand, you know, like tighter. And she's like, come on. And anyway, they get up to me, and he had like little tears in his eyes, and he was just telling me, and he's about 30, nicely dressed, two of them really nicely turned out and, you know, looking well. And then the tears started, and he was telling me he's got really bad depression and struggling to get up in the mornings. And the wife was, or the girlfriend was sort of, you know, like nudging him on, and he didn't have much to say, very little, but the words, he got out what he could. And then we just had a huge hug. And I just thought that was like, guys are really bad at talking, you know, like to each other. I was just like, here's this guy in Liverpool, you know, it's a big busy city, he's come all the way in here, and he just wants to be human, he's looking for anything to help him. And I think that, like, yeah, just that human connection is really, really important. I've got it from dogs, and that's introduced me to other people. But if it's the one thing that's sort of missing in people's lives a lot at the moment, I think.
Yeah. And just that passing it on to somebody, you know. So you've lost Snoop.
I did. Yeah. That was about 10 days ago, I'd say. And it's weird. It's kind of grief. But like, I lost another one, Tina, who's also amazing. But I was really upset about her, but I wasn't upset about Snoop. And I'm kind of like feeling guilty. I was kind of relieved because he was so old and like really sore. And it was just time to go. He was suffering the last few months. So my overwhelming sense has been relief, which I'm really feeling guilty about. Like I'm like, come on now, you should cry or something, you know. But I think when I've this has come at the right time, all this travel and tour and stuff. I think when I get back, sit down, and he's not there, I'll have a little cry and be upset. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's true love when you can, you know, put aside your own feelings and you know that he's in a better place and he was suffering and that was no way to live. Do you think he was in your life to bring you to this point?
Oh, definitely. Like I said, I wouldn't be alive if it wasn't for him. And now I've gone to a few places, like a park in Manchester. I just went to the Ivy Gardens, going to Phoenix Park later, places we used to run together and do 5Ks when I was trying to, like, I was used to walk with him in the depths of despair. Like even in the Love in Dublin days, and, you know, not that long ago, I'd have me and him walking and I'd just be there, maybe a podcast, maybe not, but I'd be just doing deep breathing, like, you know, trying to get my anxiety under control. And I'd be looking at trees and little tricks that, you know, I'd been taught to try and get my anxiety. So he was there with me every step of the way through those dark days. And then to be going back and seeing like thousands of people turn up and like walk with me in his memory, like that just blows my mind, you know, it blows my mind. So he is responsible for a lot, yeah.
Wow, that is just so incredible. Thank you so much for sharing so much with us today. I don't normally like to ask people, you know, what's next? Because I love to just be here now. But what is next?
In the immediate term, I need to just, like, I just love the dogs and I love being around them and helping them. Like if I would... A dream life would be to just help 50 dogs and just a small scale, but yeah. I want to help them at a big scale. Do you know what? I don't, like, being brutally honest, in my email, there's about 50 documentary requests, like Netflix and all that sort of stuff. I haven't even looked at them. They come in and I'm like, I'll get to that soon. And so I could go in that direction and like, but then I'm like, is that the best thing for the dogs? I should have a better answer than that, but I don't have a clue. I just keep doing what I'm doing. And like, I just keep doing nice things and nice things just keep coming back to me. So I think that's the, like, genuinely, I'll walk out the door and I'll just do nice things because I've been doing that for 18 months and like, it comes back times 1,000, like really times 1,000.
Oh my God, because I normally finish by asking people what's a mantra, but I just got one from you right there. Just go out the door and do nice things.
Yeah.
It's so amazing.
Yeah, that's it. It's probably my addictive personality, but I'm going to actually go and try and figure out how to do even more nice things. Do you know what I mean? Like all I'm doing is helping dogs at the moment and posting a bit of Instagram content. So I'm being selfish in saying that, because you've no idea, like my pockets are full of like gold tags for the dogs. I've got like little what are those called, rosary beads. I've got cards. I've got stuff that people have given me out in the street. That's just nice, isn't it? And that's just come from me being kind. So it comes back to you.
Yeah. And so you'll just keep putting one foot in front of the other, keep doing what makes you feel warm and see where you end up.
Yeah. And that's it. And stay off the drinks. If anybody suffers from depression or anything like that, just avoid the substances and the self-medicating, because that's the road to nowhere. You know, I still have anxiety and depression. And it could, you know, so I think I'm in the clear. I'm never going to drink again in my head, but I just have to be careful. And yeah, one foot in front of the other.
Oh, well, thank you so much. You're such an inspiration. I know that you've definitely helped so many people listening to this today and inspired us all to, what was it? Go outside and do nice things. Yeah. You should put that on a jumper or get you some merch.
Yeah.
Niall, thank you so much for coming in today.
No worries. Thanks a million.
Oh, big thanks to Niall for everything he gave to the Good Glow today. So grateful to him. And I'm very excited to watch that Netflix documentary someday in the future. As I said, it's not the last episode. I will keep you posted when that is coming. Very special couple of weeks for our family, so keep your eyes peeled for that. And if you'd like to join The Reset, it's still not too late. Reset, rebalance, refocus, 14 days of coaching, meditations, visualizations. You can sign up on the goodglow.ie or click the link in the episode show notes. I'll talk to you very soon.